Joining me today, writer, actor, director, producer, Gary Sinise. Next on The Culture Catch. Today's show is brought to you by our friends at Podkive. For all of your web hosting needs, visit podkive.com. Joining me today on The Culture Catch, I'm very, very excited to have actor, writer, executive producer, Renaissance man, Gary Sinise. Gary, welcome.
Thanks for having me.
Brothers at War is an unbelievable documentary. The emotional impact of watching human beings operate on this level is something we've never seen, at least in my knowledge. I mean, we see biopics. You know, we see, I guess you would say, politicalized versions of documentaries left, right. You know, very rarely do we have something down the middle that says these are human beings operating in a real life situation. You know, a whole family, not just human beings, but a whole family. And what was it that brought you into the project and that resonated with you?
Like you say, I fell in love with this family that this movie is about when I saw it. I met Jake Rademacher, who made the movie, about a year and a half, I mean, a couple years ago.
Right.
And I met him through a friend of mine who had seen the film and thought that I would appreciate it, so he asked me to meet Jake. I met Jake and asked Jake to show me the movie. And I sat with him in a small screening room and watched the film, and was very moved by it, moved by the story of the one brother going to Iraq with a camera in search of his two brothers who are serving in the military, and his need to find out why they're serving and what they're doing over there. And through their brothers in arms, people that they are serving with over there, he gets to know them better and he gets to know himself better. And it's a very moving and touching documentary about military families, military life, service. It has a high... It really shows the troops and this high degree of integrity and this sense of duty that they have. And not all of them serve for the same reasons. But this is the story about some people that do. And his brother Isaac is a military man. He's a West Point graduate, and he's called to serve. And he says it in the movie. He says, this is just who I am. This is what I do. This is what feels natural to me, is to serve. I don't do it for the money. I just do it for, because I'm called to duty in some way, to serve something, serve my country and something greater than myself. And having been around so many military families and military folks, I've seen a lot of that, and I responded well to that, because I don't think we see that enough. We've certainly seen other sides of military life that maybe have been less honorable in films or on the news or something like that. But this is a side of military life that is definitely exists. It's out there. It's there are people in the military who want to be in the military. They like it.
Are you born into the role of the soldier? Are you made into the soldier? And I think this explains, you do. As you said, Isaac was born. Joe starts out, the filmmaker brother was the guy,
Jake.
Jake wanted to be in the military and didn't get into West Point.
Right.
And then his two younger brothers do get in.
Well, his brother Isaac graduates from West Point.
No, Joe didn't go to West Point.
Right.
Right. He's the
sniper. But Jake always thought he was going to go. He was going, ever since he was a kid, he thought he was going to go to West Point. And then his eyes were bad, and he just, for whatever reason, couldn't do it. But his younger brother Isaac goes and graduates, and he's, Isaac is a great leader, and he's working his way up. You know, he's now become a major, and I have no doubt he'll go as far as he wants to go in military service, because that's who he is.
There's a very poignant moment when Jake is first deployed, and I'm amazed that he's able to get this access. I mean, I think this is one of the things that's extraordinary about this. I mean, he's behind enemy lines.
Yeah, he got to do some things that, you know, are pretty unusual.
You don't even read about some of these operations that, you know, he's involved in the sniper operation. I mean, certainly. But there's a moment where he grabs a shot, and I don't know who was reading it in the platoon, of Catch 22 by Joseph Heller. And it's just a quick shot. And you think, wow, this to me kind of summed up, you know, the whole experience of this documentary in that one tiny shot. And I thought, what a great moment. You know, because it regardless of what you bring politically to the table when you watch a movie like this, you can't help but be moved by the dedication of the individuals involved.
Yeah, and there's also a scene where they're watching the OC, which is pretty,
which is pretty funny, human,
too.
Right? Yeah.
You know, these
talking
guys
talking about which chick they like,
talking about what episode they like of the OC the most. I mean, there's some pretty humorous stuff in the movie. I remember there's at the end of the film we see something that we never see, which is our troops working on a mission with the Iraqi soldiers.
Right.
The Iraqis going out to serve, the Iraqis fighting the fight, and our guys supporting them and training them. And they get caught in a crossfire. And there's one funny moment that happens right before the bombs go off and things like that, where Jake comes up with his camera, and one of the Marines is standing with three of the Iraqis, and he says, okay, this is, you know, this is Saeed, and this is blah, blah, blah. Smile for the camera, smile, and they're all smiling for the camera and everything. And he goes, okay, turn around. The bad guys are over there. Keep your eyes on them.
You know? What the sergeant said, you know, I used to care more about my Marines, but when the civilians started serving with us and, you know, the people of Iraq started serving, then I had a new sense of why we were here, and, you know, it awakened him. That's a very poignant moment as well.
Yeah, you know? And you know, you can see how you can see how good our guys are, and you can see how they're working very hard to try and help these Iraqis stand up and you know, defend their own country. And you can see these Iraqis have a great respect for our guys that are serving with them. And when he tells them they did good, the smiles on their faces, and
absolutely,
it just warms your heart. It makes you feel great about our guys. It makes you feel that these Iraqis are struggling. They, you know, why shouldn't they enjoy the freedoms that we have? And if they learn how to defend themselves, maybe they can preserve that.
Right. Would you have been a military person had you not gone the course of Steppenwolf in your career arc?
Don't know. I never had thought about it as a kid. I remember during the Vietnam War, I had to register for the draft. I was the last year, 1973, I went and registered for Selective Service, but we were ending the war at that time.
Right.
And so it, you know, I wasn't going to have to, you know, get drafted or anything.
Did you have military
but
family?
But I remember being quite nervous about it.
Sure. And well, that was a different time and a different...
My parents were quite nervous about me getting drafted or something like that. You know, I didn't know much about what was going on. But later on, I met several Vietnam veterans. And my wife and I got together in the mid-70s, her two brothers had served in Vietnam. Her sister was a captain in the Army when she retired, her sister met her husband, who was a Vietnam veteran and stayed in the service for 24 years. So I met a lot of Vietnam veterans, and you know, in the early 80s there, I really started thinking about what they had been through and how terribly they were treated when they came home from war. And I think that, you know, that's one of the motivating factors in my decision to get so actively involved in supporting our current, you know, active duty service members, is to make sure that when they come home from war, they know that their service is appreciated. They don't have to feel ashamed of their service. They don't have to go in the bathroom at the airport, take off their uniform because they're afraid of getting spit on. We treated our Vietnam veterans pretty terribly. It was a divisive and really difficult time in our country. And the Vietnam veterans, you know, paid a price.
Absolutely.
And they're still suffering from that. And we just don't want that to ever happen again.
Well, you obviously brought a lot of that angst into Forrest Gump with your portrayal of Lieutenant Dan. So was that around the time? Well, actually, you would have met your wife before that. You had that personal relationship.
Yeah, I was already involved with Vietnam veterans for many years before Forrest Gump. So when Forrest Gump came along, it just felt really natural to
me.
I had a deep respect, admiration, and empathy for, you know, men who served in Vietnam and what they had gone through. I was very involved early 80s with groups of Vietnam veterans in the Chicago area. I had done some theater work that was all based on, there was a play I did called Tracers. It was based on, written by a group of Vietnam veterans based on their experiences. I ended up directing that at my theater company in 1983-84 and got very involved at that time with Vietnam veterans groups in the Chicago area. Stayed involved with them. And Forrest Gump came along, and it just felt I wanted that part very badly because I just felt I wasn't, you know, my mission of trying to support Vietnam veterans was not complete, and I could help that by playing that part. When I got the part, you know, it became very personal, and I wanted to make sure I did it the right way. Then I got involved with the disabled American veterans after that because I played a disabled vet in Forrest Gump, and I stayed very actively involved with disabled veterans. And then when we started deploying after September 11th, I was very, you know, very moved by what happened on September 11th, frightened,
right,
and wanted to do whatever I could to support those who were going out to fight this war.
Right. We have to wrap, really? I thought we had 20 minutes.
They told me to come in and wrap.
Wow.
A few minutes. Well,
okay. We have another one starting at 1:15.
2 minutes.
Okay. The movie, how do you think it's going to be received by the general public? And documentaries are so hard to get theater placement today.
Yeah, you know? Well, you know, yeah, how many documentaries do you see every year that actually make it to the theaters?
Yeah.
Very few. This one has, thankfully, made it to some theaters.
Right.
Now, we have a very limited advertising budget. We're hoping that word of mouth starts to spread. We're getting some great reviews. Roger Ebert in the Sun-Times in Chicago gave it a glowing review. We're trying to exploit, obviously, all the free press that we're getting. And I came on as executive producer to help do that. I've been supportive of the movie for the past year and a half in many other ways, but then they asked me if I would consider coming on as executive producer and being part of the team to help support this film, and I'm proud to do that. I believe in the movie. I think it's a movie I've seen. You know, we opened it in military markets in Fort Benning area in Columbus, Georgia. We were in Fayetteville, North Carolina, and Jacksonville, North Carolina. These are military communities. Those communities are pouring out for the movie, really appreciating the film. It's done well in Chicago this past weekend. We did well in D.C. this past weekend. It's only in 5 or 6 markets right now, in 1 or 2 theaters in those markets. But generally, it's people are going to see it.
Right.
So if we can get the word of mouth going, keep things going, we're opening in 20 more cities in 2 weeks. You can go to brothersofwarmovie.com to see where the movie is opening. And I highly recommend it. It's a fine documentary, and it gives you a look at a brother's love for his two brothers in a very heartwarming way, and it shows you another side of Iraq and what our troops are doing over there that I don't think we're getting.
Right. All right. Okay, thanks.
Thank you, bud. Another time we'll do a longer one.
I'd like to thank today's guest, Gary Sinise. Even though it was a short interview, hopefully you enjoyed it. And if you enjoy our programming, please leave your comments in the iTunes directory.
You can visit us at culturecatch.com for your daily written reviews. Keep aggregating that smart culture. Keep it tuned to Culture Catch. This is Dusty Wright. I'll see you soon. Converge is the word. That, of course, is Mr. Alvin Batiste, clarinetist, the late great, legendary pioneer of jazz, from his record Late, that's Bat's Blues.